We'd like to start this episode with a quick disclaimer. We are doing a panel of experts that are talking about substances that might not be legal where you live. So we're going to start this with a disclaimer. This podcast does not provide any medical advice. The topics included in this episode are for informational purposes only. No material on this platform is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new regimen. And never disregard or decline professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this episode.
Welcome to FemStrong, the podcast by, for, and about women in strength sports. I'm Jess.
I'm Britt.
I'm Meredith.
Welcome to a podcast about strength sports that is not dominated by a male voice. Awesome. Well, we are recording on Zoom today. Later in the episode, you will have a panel interview from some high-level powerlifters, strongman athletes, and bodybuilders, and women with a lot of knowledge about PED use. So we're so glad that you're here. We are recording on Zoom because of the logistics of everything, so bear with us if there's any audio snafus. And thanks for listening to the beginning part of this podcast. We know not everyone loves listening to our intros before we get to the interviews, but some people love these sections where we talk about our training and our big lifts. So bear with us, or, you know, fast forward to the panel if you're not into it.
Skippers unite.
Yeah. Hey, Britt, how's your training going?
It is going pretty swimmingly, actually. And I mean that in a couple ways. I've been swimming more. I've been running more. I've been doing yoga. But I'm also doing regular lifting. I don't know. This week was the first week where sets of 10 and like sets of 9 and 12 and stuff has been like kicking my ass this whole time. And then this week, all of a sudden, I'm like, give me more, boss. I could do sets of 20. Let's go. Dang. So I don't know what happened, but my cardio just suddenly was like, we're here to party. Let's go. So I'm actually really enjoying it. But how about you, Jess?
My training is very ramped up right now. I'm 2.5 weeks out, I guess. Almost exactly 2 weeks out, actually. Wow. So by the time this comes out, it'll be a week and a half. So things are really heavy, and like sometimes things go super well. And then like yesterday, deadlifts just like felt really, really heavy. So it is what it is. I think for me with strongman training, because it gets so heavy and the intensity is so high, I have to just kind of go with the flow. And if something isn't feeling great, I just got to power through. But my moving events especially are feeling really good. So I'm excited to compete. I'm a little nervous. This is only my second high level show as an open weight class competitor instead of a weight class competitor. So my body moves differently now because my size is different, and it's just heavier weights. But yeah. And then Meredith, how's your training going?
It's good. I haven't really been doing a lot of strength training. So I joined the challenge with my very pregnant friend in that we're trying to walk 10,000 steps a day, which I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And I'm like, fuck, I gotta go for a walk like every break from work. Yeah. And it's cool. We're enjoying nature. and I did go to the gym. I'll go after we record this too, but I've gone to the gym once this week and I did like box step ups and 100 lunges and the rower. And I was like, that's right. I'm really sore from box step ups. I forgot that that happens. but it's good. It's nice to get back into the swing of like walking and yoga, and a couple of days at the gym feels nice.
I also, this past weekend went, was flown in actually to Utah to be one of the head, to be one of the head judges at a strongman show there in Utah. There were 63 athletes. It's called Legends of Strength. So all of the events were based on like different, like mythological, like stories of strength. So, I can't even pull one out of the top of my head, but we had like one that was called a serpent press. So it was like a really long, narrow sandbag that they had to lift from the ground to overhead. A mast carry. So, you know, like on a boat, there's like, you have like the mast. So it's like this big wooden thing that they had to like stand up with and walk on their backs. It was really cool. It was a very theatrical event. Oh, Conan's wheel. Obviously that one you can put two and two together with Conan's. So this is my second time ever judging a show. The first time in 2018, I went up to a show in Washington expecting to be a like loader. Like, so one of the big things with strongman is you need people to load the weights on and off and move, reset the implements every time. It's a very laborious activity. And that's what I went expecting to do for the show. And then ended up being a judge and a scorekeeper. And I enjoyed it then, but I enjoyed it even more now. That I was like, you know, intentionally a head judge. It just was super fun to be a part of people's PRs and be a part of people's celebrations and to give back to the sport in that way. I mean, I call it giving back to the sport, but like I got to fly and stay for free to judge the show, but it was super fun. And there were some really cool feats of strength that happened and I made some new friends. So that's what strongman's all about in my opinion. So, yeah.
I mean, that's a really good point. I know that you you might have gotten like spoiled, so it doesn't feel like you were, you know, giving back or volunteering, but you were, like, you were dedicating your time to something. And these sports that we love, they don't exist if people don't do that, right? Even if it's like the loading or spotting or even just like athlete expediters, which is my favorite. If those of you who are listening are competing and, you know, not volunteering at all, should maybe look into it, because it doesn't exist if nobody's willing to do it, you know?
Yeah. I try to volunteer at least once a year at a show, just to give back. And I want to do more, just as very time consuming. And in COVID there haven't been a ton of opportunities in our area. But yeah, definitely do that. Big lifts. Who wants to go first?
I can.
Okay.
Zoom is so fun, guys. I can't see your body language.
No.
Okay. So, first with my big lifts, I, USA Weightlifting actually announced the team for the Olympics for weightlifting. And so for the, for the overall team, both men and women, it's the, oh my gosh, where did it go? It's the largest Olympic team the US has had since 1996, which is super exciting. Wow. But there are four, it looks like, women. One of them is Jordan De La Cruz. She's their 49 kg lifter. Maddie Rogers is the 76 kg weightlifter. And then, did I click the wrong one? Just kidding. Maddie is the 87.
I was going to say,
It went to the wrong profile. Catherine Nye is the 76 kilogram weightlifter. And then 87 plus is Sarah Robles. Yeah.
Sarah's pretty prolific online. Yeah.
Yeah, I see that. And so they're the women competing in the Olympics for Team USA Weightlifting. And then Julia Oh gosh, Miss Rendino is an Olympic weightlifter from Italy, and she did a PR snatch of 94 kilograms one day ago.
Oh, yesterday.
I know. Yesterday, not in April.
And 94 is about 207 pounds.
Yes. Yeah.
As a snatch.
Yeah. Wow, and she's a 64 kilo weightlifter and she's 18.
Wow.
Awesome.
Oh. Yeah.
So, casual. Wow. So she's, I'm not going to say she's new, but she's still young. Wow.
Yeah. She's a two-time European champion in 2017 and 2019. So she's kicking ass. Yeah.
You know, one thing I noticed when you were listing the weight classes that America sending to the Olympics, there's fewer weight classes than what was competing at the European championships.
I don't know why.
That's interesting. I was
expecting more of them. When they announced it, I was like, oh, all right, I guess we're only doing four. That's cool, I guess.
See if I can figure out why in the interim.
Awesome. And then 6 days ago, Louise Vinkeitel, I believe is her name. She's from Denmark. She is 6 feet tall. And she is, I'm trying to find her weight, but she did a 101 kilogram snatch. Gave her the Danish record in the 87 kilogram class, and she got a total of 218 kgs at a championship that was in Colombia last week, and that also broke a Danish record for her.
So in pounds, that's a 480 pound total. And that's a 222 pound snatch, give or take. And so that's a 257 pound clean and jerk. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she fought for her snatch. It was fast. And then she grinded that shit up. And I'm proud of her. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And then the last weightlifter, before I move into my powerlifter, is Hunter Elam. She's the hybrid weightlifting, one of the hybrid weightlifting coaches at Steffi's gym. Mm-hmm. But she did a 100 kg snatch, which is 220 pounds. And she is, I believe she's 65 kilo body weight is where she sits usually. And I believe that's a PR for her.
Nice. Awesome. Nice work.
And then my last big lift is our friend Sophie Kaplan from Portland. Woo! She did a 420 pound deadlift, and she's a 63 kilo
body. Say it again.
For me, right?
How much of a deadlift?
420.
Nice.
And she's
her caption says 420 lol. Yeah, she's this coming weekend.
And she's a coach out of Oddball, right?
Oddbarbell.
Yeah, in Portland. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Sophie's awesome. So I'm excited for her to compete this weekend, and she's obviously gonna kill it. So
yeah.
Go Sophie. She'll have competed by the time this comes out, but
Jess, do you want to go ahead with yours?
Yeah. So my big lifts, I have Noémie Alibert, who I believe is from France. She in her profile says that she's a two-time European champion. She lifts in the IPF. She's a 52 kilo lifter, and she just deadlifted 385 for three. And it was super speedy. So that was really cool. And then someone who I think many of us know, Christy Hawkins, deadlifted a top set of 540 pounds for six reps.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Huh?
Yeah. So, and then wow. She hit a sumo PR single at 573 pounds. And I believe that Christy Hawkins is an 80 kilo. Oh no, she's 165 pound lifter. So, nice. Yeah, big lifts from her. She's one of those women that goes back and forth with taking the all-time world record.
Nice.
The next lifter I have, we featured her on the podcast before, but I couldn't go without mentioning this, Inez Carrasquillo. She high bar squatted 415 for 10.
What?
Yeah. High bar, not even low bar.
High bar.
And Jesus. looked super solid. So that was a very impressive set from her. Venturing over into the weightlifting world, I have Emma Carey. She's a 17-year-old CrossFit athlete and Olympic weightlifter. And she is, she doesn't have her weight class listed, but she just power cleaned 245 pounds at 17 years old.
What?
So that was a big PR for her.
Oh my gosh.
The last lift that I have, again, she's been talked about on the podcast before. It is Karina Davis, Quadzilla 619 on Instagram. She had a really good meet. She got a 512 sleeved squat, a 363.8 bench, and a 523 deadlift. So that was a 1400 total on the dot. And so the fifth highest sleeved total for super heavyweight women ever. And she also is coming back from a knee injury. So she July of 2020 had a quad tendon strain after training, and then had an accident at the beach with her son and blew her patella tendon out and off to the side. So she had knee surgery, and she was told that she has no cartilage left behind her kneecap.
Ow.
And he basically told her like that she wasn't going to lift again. And then this was her comeback meet. So good on you, Karina. That's really awesome to see. And that's the kind of stuff that we live for, right?
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
My last big lift, actually, I don't even know if we're going to be able to find a video of it, so we'll have to see, but is from this weekend, the show that I judged. Logan Sim, I believe, is a 15-year-old strongman competitor. She trains with her dad in Utah, and she had an 18-inch silver dollar deadlift PR of 410 pounds. That's at 15 or 16 years old. It was a really, really cool moment. And, her and her dad cried afterwards. It was really sweet. So that was really cool to watch and to judge. Yeah.
I got goosies. That's so sweet.
That's awesome.
All right, Britt, take it away.
All right. So my first big lift this week comes from Whitney Baxley. So Whitney is out of Las Vegas, Nevada. She's a 60 kilo lifter. And she ended up deadlifting at her meet a 518-pound deadlift. Wow. Lifetime PR. It looked like a really hype environment. But yeah. My next lifter is Helen Murphy. So she is 17 years old, USPA drug tested. Mm-hmm. And she competed 2 weekends ago, maybe. And she squatted 397. She benched 176 and she deadlifted 586, which means that she totaled 960-ish pounds as a 17-year-old. So pretty impressive there.
Yeah.
And let's see here. Next, I have Bethany Grace Lovett.
Probably love it.
Okay.
I don't know though. Maybe she can correct us.
Yeah, perhaps. She did some gnarly looking block pulls. She ended up doing a block pull with 270 kilograms, which is 595. And wow. Not very, Yeah, they're not like absurdly high blocks by any means. So pretty pretty impressive. And then my final big lift, if you will, just doing a high level discussion about a bodybuilding show covering one of our guests later in this episode competed in a figure show in at the NPC Junior Nationals, and she ended up finishing second overall. Her name is Kayla Forcier. And I know her goal was to go into that to get her pro card, but she sounds determined more than ever, and it sounds like she's going to turn back around for another opportunity for one. So, and then speaking of women who got their pro cards that weekend, Laura Butler, also, she ended up getting her IFBB pro card that weekend, and she's actually the youngest person in Kentucky to do so.
Wow.
That's awesome.
I would love to know her age, but I couldn't find it. So, but she's the youngest. but yeah, and that concludes my big lifts, but I did want to loop back to the discussion about weightlifting in the Olympics and reducing the categories. So I gave you the quick goods. And it sounds like both weightlifting and boxing reduced significantly in their number of weight classes. In past Olympics, it looks like it was 10 or 7. It depends on the website I went to. So who knows, maybe it's in different years. And now they're reducing it even farther down to 5. And the reason for that depends on the site you visit. Some of them are because of financial reasons, but a lot of them are talking about drug protocol and how a lot of either past Olympians or current Olympians are flagging for previously uncategorized WADA substances. So the PED usage is resulting in almost a, I don't want to say a punishment, but they're reducing funding for the sport because so many countries are not abiding by the laws of the IOC. So interesting.
Yeah.
Those were all opinion pieces.
Right.
But there's some that are a bit more dramatic than others, indicating that this is the end of Olympic weightlifting. But some are a lot more hopeful, saying that this is just the beginning of a cleaner era of weightlifting. So
well, what a kind of interesting. What a perfect transition point, Britt. We are about to transition over to interviewing a panel of four women, as we mentioned at the beginning of this episode, to talk about PED use among women in strength sports. And, you know, the particular context of the conversation that you're about to listen to is women who are in sports that are untested, right? There is no testing protocol done in the leagues in which these women participate in strongman, bodybuilding, and powerlifting. Now, powerlifting and bodybuilding and do have federations that do test for substances, for performance-enhancing drugs, and Olympic weightlifting has always been a tested sport. And so as you listen to this conversation, just keep in mind that this is by no means any of us advocating for any use, and especially not if you are in a sport that is tested. This is a conversation that we wanted to enter into because we do know that people use, even in the midst of tested federations. But also, we just feel like there is not a ton of information out there for women who are interested in experimenting or trying out performance-enhancing drugs for what, you know, women who are in leagues that are not tested.
I think one of the things that I also really wanted to emphasize is this is us trying to make it safer for women. So often the resources that are published are directed at men, and we talked about it a lot during this interview, but we need our own resources. We need our own coaches. We need our own experts. We just want to watch out for the safety of our listeners. So, you know, they know that they have their resources and that, you know, their bodies are not just tiny men. We have our own very unique requirements. So,
So, you know, take this as an introductory, precursory conversation about PEDs for women in strength sports. Remember the disclaimer at the beginning and know that we are planning on doing, you know, at least one more panel with these women and perhaps other panels with other experts just to continue the conversation going so that women can be safe and healthy as they participate in these sports. So this is our panel on PEDs and women. These are people who have some modicum of expertise as far as PEDs and women in strength sports. So ladies, who are you and what do you do either in work or in sport?
Going first.
How about Kayla? Let's start with you.
Okay, I'll start. Hi, so I'm Kayla. I live in Fargo, North Dakota. So right out in the middle of nowhere in the frozen tundra. I am a coach, so I have my own coaching business that I do full time, mostly online now. I coach Gen Pop clients, mainly dealing with like hormone and gut issues, but I do have some competitors as well. And powerlifters and bodybuilders specifically is who I work with. And then as far as like my sport, I compete in competitive bodybuilding and powerlifting. Currently, I'm competing in bodybuilding cycle. Probably going to stick with that for a little while now. I just competed at Junior USA's, took home second place after 3 years of being off of competing. So now the next one is Junior National. So that's the plan in a few weeks here. So then I see how that goes, see if I can try my shot at a pro card again. I compete in figure two, by the way. And for powerlifting, usually the 114 weight class, but this coming off season, I'll probably have to go up a weight class if I compete in this off season.
Okay. Well, why don't we invite our other bodybuilding woman to introduce herself? That's Dawn.
So I'm Dawn. I compete in strongman and bodybuilding. I've been doing strongman for like 4 years now. And last year when COVID canceled the world and my whole year in strongman, I transitioned over to bodybuilding, did my first show. I'm preparing for United States strongman nationals in 3 weeks, I think it is. And after that, then we will transition into bodybuilding for NPC nationals at the end of the year. I'm a registered nurse. And I got involved in the whole arena of PEDs just because I wanted to know more about it. And as I got involved and started learning, then I got really passionate about the chemistry and the pharmacology and how it works in our bodies and our hormones, and ended up getting really deep into learning about how to help women take care of themselves while they do this and not necessarily damage their bodies. And would like to go to school to get my nurse practitioner's license and work with athletes with hormones, as well as transitioning, working with people who are transitioning, helping them manage their hormones and learn how to manage side effects, because I think the medical field doesn't do a really good job of helping people manage their health and their side effects when they're taking exogenous hormones.
Awesome. Well, Becca, why don't you go?
Sure. So I am what do I do for work? I'm a nutrition coach mostly. I have a master's in nutrition counseling. So I'm mostly doing that nowadays, but I've been a coach and a personal trainer for a decade now. And I live in Brooklyn, New York, in the almost the heart of the city. I've been competing in strongman for like 6 years now. You can tell that I only kind of know anything that I talk about. And I'm doing powerlifting for 3 years before that. I've been lifting weights a long time. I'm kind of like, I got into like PEDs, I think, because at some point I was really reckless. And I just didn't make thoughtful decisions. And then I'm actually probably a lot more thoughtful and way less reckless now than I've ever been. But I'm a pro strong woman. I compete at a very high level. So it's just kind of like, you know, at this level, it's just kind of part of the game. So I've gotten a lot more into it as far as like pushing kind of the boundaries of what I'm comfortable with and trying like more variety of things and different things in the last few years and kind of figuring out what I think is like, you know, most optimal for me anyways. So I would say that while I'm obviously a student of science, I have a drug coach. So as far, you know, I'm more likely to give people a lot more feedback and sort of into what my experience has been like and why I made decisions that I made. And I'm usually very thoughtful when people ask me for advice about, you know, kind of just trying to get them to not do it the way I did it in the beginning. So that's that. That's what I do.
Mm. Well, and then Bree, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Great. Hey, everyone. I'm Bree. I am a competitive powerlifter living in Las Vegas, Nevada. I compete at a pretty high level in powerlifting in the women's 165 class. I currently hold the all-time record deadlift at 585. I just competed recently in February, and I'm currently starting prep for the showdown in Kansas City, Missouri. Sorry, that was my microwave. I'm cooking beef and rice. I'm primarily a nutrition and strength coach. I work with more nutrition clients than strength clients right now, just because it's what I enjoy. I'm going to be attending UNLV here in Las Vegas in the fall, studying communications and possibly minoring in business. Still kind of on the fence about that though. And I got into PEDs because I felt that I had already developed a pretty good strength base. I started my first cycle in like 2019 preparing for my big first meet, which was the Kern US Open. So I wanted to start much earlier than I did, but I decided to wait, and I'm glad that I did. And I kind of just made the decision because I knew that I was going to compete at a high level, and you kind of have to do that to keep up when you're at a certain level in the game. So yeah. That's it. I'm super bad at like talking about myself or like introducing myself. Sorry.
Oh, that was perfect.
Everyone did awesome. So speaking of starting, perfect transition, Bree. So one of the first things we wanted to talk about today was initiating PED use and the advice that you'd have for people who are interested in starting and are beginning that research. Because one of the things that Rebecca mentioned was being informed before starting, right? So what is your guys' biggest piece of advice for someone to do before they start?
I guess because I did it the wrong way, I'll talk. I think like what I did was like very similar to what a lot of people end up doing, men and women alike, is that you start lifting, you hang out with a crew of people that lift, all those people are doing drugs. So you're like, I'll take some drugs, which is not the way to do it at all. I think really the thing that I try to impart on anybody who asks me about it at this point, and this isn't really like, I don't think it matters whether you're a man or a woman, the decision to start doing it. If anything, I think in some ways for a man, it's a bigger decision because once a guy like goes on test, they pretty much have to stay on test forever. And women can very easily come off and be fine. So anyways, my point is that I think the thing I was trying to tell everybody is like, you know, did you really get as far as you could without it? And that's like so important, because once you make the decision to go on, as said, if you're a man and you go on test, you're pretty much married to test for the rest of your life at that point. And if you're a woman, it's like, even at that point, like if you decide to go on, I can guarantee you, you're not going to want to come off and still compete after that. Like anyone who's been on,
it's not fun.
So it's kind of like, you know, I always tell my clients, like, get the most you can out of least possible. And that goes for nutrition, training, whatever. Like in the beginning, you want to get the most reward for the least amount of investment. So that's like for training, like you want to make sure that you got as much as you could out of it naturally, or at least to a point where you're relatively plateaued before you're like, okay, do I want to take this next step? Because if you're really serious about competing and training, like once you take that next step, it's very unlikely that you're going to step back if you want to keep working at a high level and at a high output. So, I mean, that's just what I tell people. Obviously, there's sort of a cost benefit analysis that anyone has to do for any decision that they make. And it's no different for PEDs. Like you have to do that sort of same cost benefit. So that's my advice. Just like make sure that you went the limit first.
I want to piggyback up with that, because I have about, I would say 100, 120 women that I consult with and help with hormones and decisions about this kind of stuff. And number one, like you said, have you really hit your genetic potential? Like if you're 20 years old and you're wanting to start on PEDs, no. I'm like, no, what is wrong with you? First of all, you're still growing. You haven't even finished growing until you're like 25. So genetic, like really seeing how far you can go, because one, you need to finish growing. Two, you really lose sight of what you're capable of if you step right into that arena and you've never like tested yourself, pushed yourself, like put in a good solid foundation. I am probably a little different than all of you guys. I didn't even start lifting till I was 40 years old. I had three children that were almost grown. So I'm 48 now. I've been lifting about 8 years, 4 years strong. I did CrossFit for a couple of years and then strongman. So I didn't even like think about PEDs until I was 46 years old. And at the time, most of the people that I was training with thought I was already on them before I started, because I had just developed and sculpted myself to the point where I looked like I was. So I say your genetic potential, your age, like you don't know what you want at 20, 22, 24. I don't care what you say. You don't know if you want children. You don't know if you're going to want to sound like I sound when you're, you know, if you get a deep voice at 24, baby, you're going to sound like a man for the rest of your life. Like you, anyway, that's what I tell these women. Like, you really have to, you don't know what you're going to want. Think it through. Don't jump into this like right off the bat. And most of them are like, I'm trying to get lean. I want to cut weight. Then get your nutrition under control, honey. Get your food under control before you even like think about this, because it's not a magic pill that just makes you grow muscles and get super lean and vascular. You got to do the work. And so that's my advice, is like really get as far as you can before you even consider it. And if you are less than 27 years old, just fucking don't do it. Just don't do it.
See, I let's chime in again real quick, because, and then I'll stop talking, but I will say that I think that's both a good point, but I would argue against having to be a certain age, because if somebody has really big aspirations in sports and they're young and their training age is old, like, you know, if someone started training when they're 13 and they want to be a world champion powerlifter and they're 22, like, I'm all for it, dude. If that's your goals and you want to hit those goals, again, it's like kind of that cost benefit analysis. You're just like a regular person who wants to get a little lean, I would never recommend doing drugs. Yeah, I would say, like, I always like tell people to think about what their goals are ultimately too. Like if you don't have big competitive goals, it's probably not worth it.
Yeah, you would not believe the amount of normal soccer mom that try to talk to me about this. Why?
Why? Yeah, I mean, it's always a quick pill, right? It's always looking for the quickest shortcut there, because it's hard to hear that, you know, a caloric deficit is going to get you to that finish point. Like hard, consistent work is going to get you there, as opposed to something you can take. So, I mean, we've talked about ages, we've talked about why not to start, but what are the risks, would you guys say? I know that's an overarching question because PEDs cover a lot of different areas, but if somebody is now, they check the box, these are the things I want to be, what are the risks that they should be aware of and know?
Like risk of virilization. I think that going back to like kind of the first question, a lot of women and even myself get their first cycle or like their first cycle recommendations or their drugs from like a dude. So I would say
like, so true.
That's how I started, you know, and luckily I had someone who was fairly responsible that I think my first cycle, I think I started with like 5 milligrams of Anavar. And then I bumped it up to 10 and then finally 15 the last like 2 weeks or something like that. But a lot of women don't have that luxury. So like ask, I consulted with a couple of women. So if you have that luxury, then do that. But again, it is a big decision. You need to make sure, you know, all those boxes are checked. Is your sleep good? Is your nutrition good? Are you getting in proper water intake? How is your training? Like, are you going hard in the gym or are you just fucking around, you know? And then you also need to realize that these are like, a lot of these are male hormones that you're putting in your body. And so these aren't necessarily side effects. They are the compound working. Mm. And you need to accept that. If you take a test based something, you know, like there's clit enlargement, there's, you know, your voice getting deeper. There's acne, like tons of side effects that a lot of people aren't aware of. Also, another fact, if you're going to start PEDs, it's not going to make you crazy. You know, steroids don't make you crazy, but if you're going to take something, maybe you should research, you know, if you're on SSRIs, how is that going to affect, you know, that chemical compound when they react together? There's so many overarching things that you need to think of that. And the side effects aren't just physical, they're mental as well. So that's a huge thing that you need to consider and look up all the effects of the drug that you're taking.
Yeah, and just to clarify, you know, you talked about virilization, and you, will you just kind of link that to some of the side effects that you said? Like, what exactly is virilization for the listeners who don't know?
Hair growth, clit enlargement, acne. I don't know, someone else can name a few.
Hair loss.
No, sorry.
What was that?
Hair loss is another big one. I know of a lot of bodybuilders, like pro bodybuilder females, who have bald spots and wear wigs on stage because they take so much drugs. So, and they have little bald spots on their head because of that. But again, that's a cost benefit thing. Like, or what are you willing to do for it? You know, they're the best in the world, but they don't have all their hair. So.
Yeah. What I'm trying to explain to the women is like, these hormones aren't naturally in your body. We have a little bit of testosterone, 8 to 48 is a normal woman's amount of testosterone, but your body basically is trying to go through puberty because it thinks that you're turning into a man. So your vocal cords get larger, so they sound deeper. So it doesn't go away. You have structurally changed your vocal cords. The hairs that start growing out of your face will continue to grow. I have to get my face sugared every 3 weeks. Or I will grow lots of little black hairs.
Isn't witch hairs
infertility, or like, isn't that a side effect as well?
Yeah, because a lot of times you stop having a period because you get your estrogen so low and your test is high, and it may or may not come back. At my age, I don't care. Please go away.
Yeah, I mean, I think the easiest way, I guess, for people that are listening to understand is that virilization is essentially the male drugs doing male things to your body. Mm-hmm. So like everyone, you know, those are all the side effects that like everyone's talking about. Those are mostly things that, like Dawn said, boys go through when they go through puberty.
I will say that the clit immersion is not necessarily a bad thing. I'm not a fan, so.
I think another thing to mention too is like, when you're taking steroids, like you need to research what you're taking, because there are longer esters and shorter esters. And if you're taking something like NPP, which is generally safer for women, if you get side effects, they typically go away if you catch it soon enough. But if you're taking a longer ester steroid, there's a big chance that that's permanent.
What's a short ester versus a long ester? Like, what is that? I don't know what that means.
Basically, like how long it stays in your bloodstream.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
It's a way to kind of put it out there. Cool. So like drugs all have a half-life.
Mm-hmm.
Half-life is essentially, I forget exactly what the, Dawn probably knows exactly what the mathematical equation is.
The amount of time it takes for half of the compound to leave your body.
So okay, cool.
There's also a really cool website available. It's called Steroid Plotter.
That is a cool website.
You can track your cycle to see how long that will be in your system. So that's a really cool tool as well. You can go by weeks, you can go by the compound, the dosage daily or whatever, or if it's every other day. So that's a really good tool as well.
Gotcha. That's awesome.
You also got to look at if it's a oral or an injectable steroid too. That definitely makes a difference too, as far as sterilization and like the effects of it and how long they last, the effects it's going to have on like your liver and your kidneys as well. Because you have to be healthy like before you even start doing something like this as well. Like Bree said, you got to have like your nutrition down, your training down. You have to be training for a long time and like have already been competing for a while. You know, it's not for someone who just is like, oh, I want to like jump into a meet or a show and I just want to, everyone else is doing it, so I'm just going to try it, but I've never done a meet before. Well, why the heck would you do that? You know, you have to make sure you're healthy first, and then like taking other medications along with that could interact with those drugs as well. And then how long you're on your cycle for, having the right kind of person there to watch you and help you, monitor you, making sure that you're not mixing certain things together that you shouldn't be, especially as far as like compounds go and everything like that. So yeah, just a lot of research goes into the whole aspect of it, I think, is the biggest part, and what you're getting yourself into and what you're willing to risk in that aspect.
I feel like that hard work piece of it is like such a common misconception with people like me, even a year ago, or on the outside of the PED or steroids world. A lot of people just think that you take steroids and you're ripped immediately. And I laugh now, but I remember a year ago not knowing anything, and asking him, actually, I was like, what do you mean? These people are all on, not all, but mostly on steroids in this gym we're at, and they're all working really hard, but they're not what I would have ever pictured before my gym knowledge. And so
I was just
I think that's a really important conversation of like, even if you're on PEDs, you still have to work even harder. And I wish more people knew that. Like, that's one of the things I would like to get on a soapbox and shout from rooftops.
You just don't take no terms of Anavar and have cap delts the next day. Like, it doesn't work. Even though that sometimes is a telltale sign of people that are on steroids. Obviously, there's those genetic freaks that walk around lean and shredded all the time. But a big telltale sign that you can sometimes tell people are on is like a lot of your androgen receptors are in your upper body. That's why within, you know, 3-4 weeks of Anavar use, I noticed that I look fucking jacked, like out of nowhere. But that's also because when I am on, like, I'm not always on my nutrition, you know, 100% of the time, but when I'm on a cycle, like, I'm making sure I'm getting the same amount of sleep, I'm drinking water, I'm training hard and pushing myself, you know, I'm doing progressive overload every single week. So it's not like I'm just, if I have inclined dumbbell, I'm not doing 50s for the whole 4 week block. I'm increasing 2.5-5 pounds every week. Like, you have to do that in order to get the most out of the compounds that you're taking.
Yes. Like Dawn said, like, you literally, you have to work almost harder when you're on these things because they allow you to recover faster. Your muscles can recover faster. Therefore, in order to keep getting that response, you have to keep working harder. So like, for example, especially someone in like a bodybuilding prep, like myself, like I still have to push each week, progressive overload, like Bree said, and I'm, you know, sitting at single digit body fat percent, but I still have to push myself harder to work, push more weight each week or more reps or something like that. Like I, even though I'm tired, you know, you have to still keep pushing that and no matter what, otherwise you're just going to, you're not going to make any changes whatsoever.
Yeah. The minute I learned it was actually more of an aid in recovery, like my whole world blew apart. I was like, what? Wait, all the stereotypes are not real. I don't understand.
I think the flip side of that is that not only do you have to work harder, I mean, the drugs just help you recover faster, which is why even if you look at a lot of like the old Bulgarian weightlifting programs and stuff that were designed for people on drugs, they're doing two a days and maxing out every single day. And the reason they're doing that, they're taking advantage of the drugs. The flip side of that, especially for a strength athlete, which it's a little bit different for bodybuilders because they don't have to worry about like being at high intensities for long periods of time all the time, because bodybuilding is for the most part a lot of volume. Like when you're working at really high intensities really frequently and you're on drugs, your muscles have the ability to recover and get strong way faster than any connective tissue anywhere else in your body. So now you have to not only train really hard, eat perfect, drink a lot of water, make sure you're really healthy. You have to take care of your body a lot harder too. So like, I mean, when I'm in a prep and I'm on cycle, like I go see my PT every single week. I like have to spend a lot of time doing like mobility and foam rolling and soft tissue work. I go in an infrared sauna like several times a week. So that sort of stuff is just as important, because if your connective tissues aren't recovering, now you're just, you might be getting crazy strong and seeing a lot of results, and then you'll just break.
That's where all the tendon ruptures happen.
Yeah. Drugs don't do you any good. Well, that's a lie. Some drugs are good when you're broken, but drugs will not fix immediately when you're broken. So being broken doesn't help any athletes, right? And so a lot of people, I think you see it more with men, just because men are pushing sheer higher numbers than women are, and all of our connective tissues are made of the same things, right? So like you see a lot more tendon ruptures and tears and things like that with men, but like even with women it happens. And there's nothing worse than like putting everything you have on the line and then breaking yourself, and then just, and then like you have no choice but to step back. So yeah, I mean, you have to do everything. Like if you're gonna do it, you've just decided that you're going to commit yourself 10 times harder to every piece of the puzzle that is being an athlete.
Also, I want to add, and we haven't talked about it yet, but like, if you're going to start drugs, for the love of God, get blood work done before so you know. People just on drugs and then they get off and they're like, what the fuck is wrong with me? I'm going through mood swings. And I made that mistake my first cycle. And I went like, I had a lot of anxiety. I went a little crazy after my first cycle of Anavar, and I could not figure why. And then I got my blood work done and everything was fucked. So then I had to work to get that back by taking vitamins, doing all this other shit, getting my nutrition under control again. And like, I think if you can afford it, getting your blood work done before, that's a must. In the middle, if you can, that's awesome. And then at the end to figure out where you're at.
I mean, I think if you can't afford to get your blood work done, you can't afford to be on PEDs.
Yes.
So there are, even if you don't have insurance, you can get your labs done through privatemdlabs.com. You can pay for it. They'll send you the requisition. And I think if you're doing a long cycle once a month, you should do your labs.
Yeah.
And there's a whole list of supplements that I recommend. And the supplements cost more than the cycle because they're so, but you're using up all of these resources in your body by using these hormones to build muscle, and your liver is processing it. Your kidneys are getting taxed, your adrenal glands are getting taxed, and if you can't afford to get the support supplements to go with your cycle, you shouldn't be doing it, because you're going to hurt yourself. You're going to burn your body out. And it's necessary, because you can't replace, you have to replace all of that you're using up.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to move on to talking about dosing, but I mean, when we're talking about all of those products that you recommend while on cycle, there's also things that you have to take after cycle, right? Like post-cycle therapy. Somebody like to talk about that? I know there's a misconception often where women do not need it, but it sounds like there's some emerging conflicting research there, if anybody wants to talk PCT.
I'm not like a huge expert on PCT. I haven't really taken enough drugs to warrant that. I've taken some things after my cycle. I actually just got sponsored by a company called Leviathan Nutrition, which one of their big like mottos is to help the enhanced athlete. So I take some of their products. I know DHEA, I think I did that right.
Yeah.
Helps a lot. Taking DIM helps as well. I don't know if anybody, I heard oyster extract as well is really good for PCT. So yeah.
Yeah.
I'm on a boat where I haven't done a ton of research into that, especially for myself. But I do know a lot about hormones and supporting like downregulated hormones because of like birth control, which that's a whole nother topic we could get into, but like birth control is basically the thing is steroid. So I help a lot of people with like coming off of birth control and people who have had the Mirena crash and stuff like that. And it's sort of the same thing, but in the opposite aspect of it's too much estrogen. So I'm helping them fix estrogen dominance and stuff like that. And I gotta, you know, I do use DHEA. I use a lot of natural holistic supplements to help bring up progesterone, testosterone, and balance that testosterone estrogen naturally, because that's what's going to be really far off when you take a steroid like that, whether it's birth control or steroids like anabolic steroids. So getting your labs done is super important, because you need to know where those levels are at, because a lot of these symptoms will overlap each other too. So getting that done, then you know exactly what to target, you know where you're at, you do your PCT cycle, and then you do them again to make sure that the PCT cycle has worked.
Also, I think it's important to note that as much time as you spend on, you should spend equal to that or more time off.
Yep.
So
for so long, I still deal with people all the time that think women don't need PCT because that's what they said forever. But the thing is that when a man does hormones, he will throw those hormones off naturally because they are naturally in his body. When a woman does exogenous hormones, they store in her fat. Your body puts it in your adipose, which is why you see bodybuilders have like two great preps, and then all of a sudden their coach has them on T3 and like 500 calories and an hour in the morning, an hour not of cardio, because they're getting fatter and they can't figure out why. It's because all of those hormones are sitting in their body. And one of the great things that I learned is there is a compound that is diuretic, and they use it for blood pressure. It's called aldactone or spironolactone. They also use it to treat hyperandrogenicity on women for PCOS. So in your PCT, that will bind to those hormones, those androgens in your body, and get them out and clean your receptors, so that first of all, you're not storing them. So you're not putting on weight that you can't figure out why you can't get off, even though you're starving yourself. And secondly, your receptors are fresh the next time around because they're not filled with all these androgens that your body doesn't know how to get rid of.
I thought I was unmuted. I was not. Classic. there's a lot to talk about there. We've covered testing before and after, making sure that your PCT was successful, that you got yourself back down to baseline, and you know, reducing the risk of that loss of femininity. But talking about dosing safely. So we've talked a lot about, you know, starting with less is more, right? But you hear people say that they're stacking. What is stacking? And do you guys know any like hard and fast rules for stacking? You know, what are the risks and rewards with stacking?
Well, can I start off first really quick to say the idea that there are female specific PEDs is bullshit myth that is circulating that needs to be washed out of everybody's mind. Every single PED is made from testosterone. There are peptides and other things. PEDs are made from testosterone. The families are named by the carbon, the specific carbon, which that testosterone is altered to do what the chemist intended it to do. So when people are like, oh, I've never done testosterone, I've just done Anavar. I'm like, honey, Anavar is testosterone. So let's start there. It's all testosterone. It's all testosterone.
You're blowing my mind so hard right now. I need more wine.
Sorry, Kayla, you were going to say something?
I just was saying, I was agreeing with Don, just because you don't inject it does not mean it's not testosterone.
So you said, I think you mentioned something about the different types of testosterone, the different families. Would you mind clarifying that one?
So there are several different families of PEDs. Testosterone is just tests. So you've got testipionate, you've got testethanate, you got testpropionate. That's all the esters that Bree was talking about. Like the length of the esters is what those things mean. Then you have the 17AAs. You have the, I brought all my notes out because I was like, I'm going to get on here and I'm totally going to forget what I'm saying. So those, and some of those are injectable, some of those are orals. So you have the 17AAs, which are Equipoise, Dianabol, and Turnabol. You have 19 Norse, those are like Mint, Tren, Deca, NPP. You have the DHTs, which are Proviron, Anadrol, Anavar, Winstrol, Primobol, and Masteron. So all of those are, it's where on that testosterone chain it's been altered. And so if you're going to stack, the recommendation that I've been taught is that you stack from two different families so that your body will be less likely to recognize and start virilizing. So they're, if you, a lot of people love to put Anavar and Primo together, but they are both in the same family. And so you're stacking DHTs, and the DHTs will A, start to make your hair fall out because they will convert into DHT in your scalp. But if you can alternate compounds, your body is less likely to recognize and start trying to virilize because the carbons are different.
That makes sense. No, that was good. Made sense to me. Yeah. I've been taking chemistry in 5 years. So at least
it makes sense to me.
In years.
And like the small bit of herbalism and medical shit I know, my brain itself is just like, this is so much amazing information. I don't know where to put it all.
So, Don, I guess, and pretty much everybody here, I would assume, has heard a horror story of this. So stacking within families is not great. I think often it happens where people accidentally stack in families. They think that they have one product when they have another product.
Oh yeah, I would say get a trusted source. Oh my gosh, if you're just getting it from Joe Blow in the gym and you haven't tested that gear, you do not know what you're putting into your body.
And by testing that gear, go ahead, Kayla, sorry.
Sorry. Around, I guess, here, like, again, I'm not, like, super experienced with all of this because I'm not, like, in that realm or anything like that specifically, but, like, I've just heard of stories, like, from places that I've been that people get from each other at the gym, because the gym bro over here says you should try this, and they give it to a girl, and they think this girl thinks it, that they're giving them like clenbuterol or something like that. And it's really DECA, and the DECA actually makes them in water. And because it's from China, because it's, oh, this is cheaper and stuff, is they make it in China or some crap like that. And the girl is actually taking DECA, and then all of a sudden she's gaining a bunch of water weight, and that's what DECA does to you. And so yeah, your source is definitely HGH too. I've also heard like you really need the pharmaceutical grade, anything less than that. Like there's certain ones where you really need to make sure that you have a good source. And of course, again, going with someone who knows what they're doing, that can help you and watch over you. That is probably something else that's going to be really important as well.
And you mentioned testing products. Is there a way that the average athlete could
you can buy test them? You can buy the testing product. I feel like that people, I know people that got them from Amazon. Like you can get the kits to test and see if you're getting what you think you're getting.
I feel like not a lot of people know that, but it's that widely available. And then let's see, how to acquire safe products. What are the red flags that you guys have seen when you hear people offering products or being interested in products? What are some red flags our listeners can look out?
I think if anyone is offering you drugs at the gym, probably not a good source. Personally, I think the best way to go about it, again, I also have a pretty firm belief these days that if you're going to do drugs, you should probably be pretty committed to a sport. If you know people that are higher up in that sport, athletes who have a lot of experience with these things, something that I found is that usually a large group of people all use the same source, like that are pretty high up in sports. Like in strongman, I know one group of guys that's huge, and they all get their drugs in the same place. And they're all pretty high level. So things like that, look out for things like that, as opposed to Joe Schmo at the gym who doesn't even compete in anything and looks like he doesn't even lift weights, but kind of has biceps. Like that's not a person you want to buy drugs from. Also,
or your boyfriend.
Don't go on some weird Chinese website that you have to Western Union money to a person you don't know. Get your drugs. You don't get a trap. Don't do any of that shit either. Don't do that. That's bad news.
A lot of the shit with the black market, with steroids, is word of mouth. So again, piggybacking off what she said, don't just go up to some random dude. I would widely judge the quality of drugs by how that person looks, if that makes sense. So, I mean, and that doesn't always mean that they're a wealth of knowledge. But like I said, if you find someone high up enough, and there's quite a bit of people around gyms all over the US or whatever that you could have some sort of contact with and go through them if you have that relationship. But yeah, buying them off I remember trying to buy them off some website, and I told somebody that was well versed in the world of steroids, they're like, oh my God, do not do that.
Hell yeah. Well, and I mean, I just want to ask, I've heard often that Anavar is the most often faked steroid on the market. And that's, yeah. And those are two of the most common that women use.
It's because they're more expensive compounds. Therefore they're widely faked for other things. I've seen Anavar faked for D-ball. I've seen Primo that was actually meant, which is a very, very energetic drug. And it had some really bad effects on the girl who ended up taking it. So, yeah.
That's sad.
I know a lot of my female friends nowadays will ask me if you know women that are on drugs that don't look like they've had really bad side effects, they probably are getting decent drugs. So reach out to them. The only problem with it is that a lot of people either a lot of women are dishonest about drug use, which makes it challenging, which I have a huge problem with, but whatever, I get it. But a lot of people either don't want to tell you where their source is or don't want to just give out, like, for instance, where I buy my drugs, I know that I can't just give that person's information out. So, like, then I have to facilitate something for someone else. So that does make it challenging because it's like a black market. Like, now there's like an added level where it's like, even if you know someone who gets good drugs, maybe you can't get your drugs from them.
Yeah. And there's a lot of frustration, I think, especially on the internet and with women in strength sports, about being frustrated that women are not open and honest about their use, especially if they're selling coaching or selling nutrition programming or whatever. And I think it is important to know that, like, this is a discussion about illegal substances, right? And so just, like, you know, have some grace with the women that you might be reaching out to. They might, you know, work jobs or whatever where they can't be open about their use. You know, Britt Meredith and I happen to live in a state where all drugs are decriminalized. So our lives look different than people who live in, I don't know, North Dakota, where in general, the lawmaking is a lot more conservative. So it is something to keep in mind. And if you are choosing to start steroids, you have to recognize that you are choosing to ingest a federally illegal drug.
I hate the people being dishonest. Because I personally can remember being the girl who did all the cardio and I followed the diet and I did the lifting and I couldn't figure out why I couldn't look like her. And so I made the decision I would never be that girl. When people ask me, I'm like, yes. Or if somebody's like, God, you look so great. You must, like, I'm like, no, let me just tell you. Like, there's gear on board. Like, I don't want to be that girl that pretends like that I just did it naturally. And I kind of, like, intentionally have tried to invade, especially the strongman world, and let people know, like, if you have somebody that has questions, I tell everybody, send them to me. I'm totally cool with answering questions because there's no information out there. And I would rather tell somebody what to do in an intelligent, healthy way. And so I can't post on the internet because I have an RN license. Like, hey, guess what? I do this. But I, in the background and in messages and meeting people, I'm very open about it because I want to help people. And I don't want to be that girl because that's like, when I finally figured it out, I was like, damn it. Why didn't you tell me?
Yeah.
I'm with you there.
I understand when people have to be secretive about things because of their jobs, but what I have found in the female community is that within the community, people lie about it, which has, you know, if you say something to someone at a show, like, it's never going to get back. Like, you know, I understand not being, you know, social media public with things. And I also understand that people have reservations because of their lives. I get that. But what I find is more often than not the case is that people have these, like, people who compete in untested sports have some weird moral high ground about saying that they're not on drugs, which in my opinion is actually makes you morally worse. But they think that, like, natural people are somehow better by being natural. So they can't, they don't want to release this information that makes them not look as good, which is, like, nobody gets brownie points for being natural and strong man, number one, by the way. And then, like, did you lose? Nobody cares. Like, so there's that. And then I just think, again, you know, like Dawn was saying, it really affects when people essentially present a false narrative, it really, really has, yeah, it has a much worse trickle down effect on all of the people who essentially look up to you and up to women who compete high up in these sports than it would ever have on me for someone thinking poorly of me because I'm on drugs. Like that's such an ego move. It's like, I don't want people to think a weird way about me because I'm on drugs. So I'm going to present a false narrative to all these other women that's going to affect. And I think that is horrific. As said, I get it that people have jobs and they have, you know, people need to protect themselves, and I understand that. But there's a lot of people that aren't doing it to protect themselves. And really, by doing that, they're just essentially psychologically hurting a lot of other people.
Yeah. Damage, so much damage.
I feel like a part of it comes back to when we were talking about the perception of you hop on and you're not as hard of a worker, or you're not like earning your progression, when in reality, once you actually become educated on it, it's the opposite, right? You're just aiding your recovery. And I feel like a lot of people don't know that. So the more we talk about it, hopefully, the more open people will become. One thing that I really wanted to make sure we touched on today was coaching. So Rebecca, you mentioned earlier that you have a coach specific for this. And I know that we were talking a lot about finding people in your area who are knowledgeable about it. You know, there are some remote parts of North Dakota where that might not be an option. There might be online resources people can find, and by resources, I mean coaches. Do you guys have any suggestions for how to find a coach that is the best fit for you?
Yeah, so I have a team of coaches at this point. I have a training coach, I have a diet coach who also assists with my drug protocols because he's just really knowledgeable about it. And then I have a drug coach who is Broderick Chavez of Team Evil GSP. He has no problem with me blasting him on the internet like this. So that's his whole thing. Everything he does, he's a doctor of pharmacology. Everything that he does in the realm of strength sports has to do essentially with PEDs and drug use. And he does training and nutrition too, but mostly people go to him for PEDs and drug use. So he looks over my blood work. I have a meeting with him anytime I'm planning like a long cycle or prep for something. Sometimes I meet with him in my off season, mostly when I'm just trying to get myself back in order. I haven't had too many issues with like post cycles ever. So luckily that's never been a huge deal, but he's great. So I found him through my diet coach, who's had a lot of learning from his company. And that's just kind of how I got connected with him. I know there's also a woman who I can't remember right now. I think she like writes for Lead FTS. A lot of people talk about her. That's a hormone lady.
Victoria Felcar.
Who is that?
Victoria Felcar.
I know a lot of women love her because she's a woman. I don't really care. I think if you're knowledgeable and you can look at everything and give me a safe plan, then I'm cool with it. So I work with Broderick, and I know a lot of people love Victoria.
That makes me so excited because I'm about to set up a consultation with Broderick next week.
Nice. He's cool. He's a man.
Awesome.
Another person that I have learned a lot about this stuff from, like, I'm still very new to learning a lot of this. So like, this was really cool to be a part of, for one. But I've learned a lot from Jamie Pinder. She has a whole course on like steroid use and anabolics and everything, PCT specifically for women. I've gotten to actually see her and do this presentation in person. So it was really, really insightful. And she's been to the Olympia a few times, I believe, and she competed in the women's physique division. And she was very, very knowledgeable about, you know, just educating before you even start a cycle or even thinking about starting a cycle and like where your training should be at, kind of like what we all touched on earlier. But she's another big one. But yeah, along with that, just making sure that your coach knows what they're doing, that they advocate for blood work, which is like a big reason that I got the coach that I have, because I knew that my blood work was off before I went to him. And I wanted to make sure that I was going to be healthy if I wanted to continue bodybuilding and stuff. And I wanted to do it for longevity and everything. And I still wanted to do all that. So doing your research on the coach is definitely important as well.
That's something that I think social media can be positively harnessed for, right? Reaching out to people that you know seem well-coached and healthy. You can at least start there and ask for their resources. So for example, the people on this panel, or even through the pod, Instagram, we can try to point you at least in a good direction. And if not us, then choose your favorite, you know, pick your poison, choose your favorite online person. So,
go ahead. I wanted to invite you all with our last few minutes to like maybe give like a 30 to 60 second like elevator speech for women considering starting PEDs. Like you're kind of like, if you were in passing at a contest and someone asked you about it, like what would your spiel be?
Let's do opposite order of introductions. Let's start with Bree.
With me? Oh God. So my piece of advice would be, like I said, get your blood work done. Do as much research as you can. Don't just rely on guys in the gym or around you who take PEDs to help guide you. Make sure that they have some sort of education or history within that subject. Again, research what exactly that drug is for, what it's going to do to you, the family of drugs. If you are going to stack, you also shouldn't be stacking if it's your first cycle, for the love of God. Less is more. And yeah, that's what I have to say. I
guess it's a sweet. That was a good, yeah, good nugget. Rebecca, it's your turn.
Oh yeah. I mean, more or less exactly what I said in the beginning of this, you know. Make sure that you are in a place where you feel like you have reached a high level of natural potential, at least a very high level, if not what you feel like is very much your natural potential. Assess what your goals really are. You know, like if you're just a hobby lifter, it's probably not for you. If you want to be the best in the world at something, if you have very high competitive goals, it probably is for you, but just make sure you do your research, talk to women who are willing to talk about it. Make sure you understand what the side effects may be and what to expect. And definitely find a coach who is knowledgeable on the subject before you decide to take that leap. And of course, that coach is going to tell you, get your blood work done.
Awesome. And Dawn?
I agree with what they said. I would say, think, really, really think through all the consequences. Do research, talk to people that are willing to be honest with you about the side effects, and because everyone has a potential for side effects, like you're going to have some kind of side effects. So think all of that through. Think about your goals, like they said. Get somebody that's knowledgeable, and make sure you keep track of your blood work. Don't let a man write your cycle that is just going to treat you like a tiny man, because we are not tiny men. We are women, and our hormones are completely different. So find somebody you can trust, and start small. Don't go balls to the wall. Start small.
Thank you. And Kayla, you're the lucky straw, going last.
Well, I don't know how I can top any of those, but I mean, I definitely agree with all of them. My biggest thing is just like with your goals, you know, if you are a local level athlete and you have to use drugs in order to be just a pretty good local level athlete, you know, how much, and your goal is to like, say, go to the Olympia, for example, and you need that much drugs to just get to a national show, you're only going to have to keep adding more as you go. So if, you know, that's not something that you want to do or you want to look into, like you have to think about that. And if you want to have kids someday, you have to think about that. You know, as much as it's just going to take a big effect on your body overall. So it's not just like a temporary thing and stuff. You have to take a long haul, and you have to think about being healthy overall. So getting blood work, again, having the right person to help you, and give you the right kind of knowledge. And, you know, if you don't seek out that knowledge specifically, have someone that knows what they're doing, and it's going to actually look out for you and care about you for sure. That's probably my biggest thing right there.
Awesome. Thank you all. I want to give you the opportunity, and maybe we'll go in the starting order again. So I'll go Kayla, Dawn, Becca, Bree. Just, you know, if you want to plug your social media, your website, your coaching service, or any sponsors, now's the time. But like, don't go for 5 minutes, you know.
All right. Well, you can find me at Kayla Forcier, Forcier on Instagram, just my name. My website is www.sproutpower.net. Again, like I said, I work mostly with like females trying to come off of birth control, menopausal women. So I do deal a lot with hormones, just not on the PED side of things. Not so much. I definitely really want to learn more about it as I go, especially being a bodybuilder and stuff. It just fascinates me and everything. So I'm just really happy that you guys asked me to be a part of this with my little low-level knowledge that I do have. But I know I've been in the sport for a while, in both sports. So I feel like I could contribute just a little bit to that. So yeah, if anyone has questions ever, just feel free to shoot me a message. I'm always open to talk about stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, Kayla. Dawn?
You can find me on Instagram at Dawn Hall_strongwoman. I'm always willing to answer questions. I help people with cycles. I do not like coach people as far as food and training. I don't have time for that. My life is too busy with work. So I'll send you to someone else. But I love to answer questions. I love to help women with this. So feel free to message me about that. And I'm glad I got to be a part of this. It was super cool. And I love to nerd out about hormones and drugs.
We loved to be an audience to it. And I understood most of it. Rebecca.
Oh yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Beck Lorch, BECLORCH. And I'll just plug all my people right now. My coach, Alec Jose, who on Instagram is Alec Jose, and Team RPE11. He's the best coach ever. and has got me to all of my accolades that I have now. So I adore him. And then my sponsors, Cerberus Strength, Viking Nutrition, and BTB Sleeves. You can find all of them and all of my discount codes on my Instagram. So if you're interested, go there. I think that's it. You can find the team and also where to get nutrition coaching from me at teamrpe11.com.
Awesome. Thanks. And finally, Bree.
All right. So you guys can find me on Instagram at Briani T. If you would like to inquire about nutrition or strength programming, my email is btstrengthandnutrition@gmail.com. There's also a link in my bio on my page. Currently working on a website. I'm really happy that you guys let me be a part of this. It's super awesome. If anybody listening wants to message me about advice on PEDs, I'd be more than happy to answer them. As for my sponsors, BTerry10 is my code for Eat Right Foods, Animal Pack, Live Large Fitness, Zone Smelling Salts, Leviathan Nutrition, which also I mentioned before, they cater to the athlete, the enhanced athlete. Also use code BREE20 for the breath belt. So shameless plug.
Awesome. And we're going to go ahead and tag everybody on our Instagram page, FemStrongPod, all one word, FemStrongPod. Everybody will be tagged in our post when we release this episode. So thank you guys so much for joining us.
I followed all of you. So get ready for questions.
Yeah. Thank you all so much. We are planning on doing a part two. So those of you listening, keep an eye out for that. And ladies, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon for calendaring.
Thank you.
Right, bye.
Bye, guys. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us for this interview. We'd really like to thank our guests today. This panel wouldn't have been successful without all of their unique takes. You can see them all tagged on our Instagram page, but their names again were Briani Terry, Rebecca Lorch, Kayla Forcier, and Dawn Hall. We are interested here at FemStrong in hosting a number of additional panel interviews, not limited to just the subject of performance-enhancing drugs, but others as well. And we open our DMs to any suggestions anybody has. And if you know an expert and you think that they would be open to talking to an audience of women about interests that impact women in strength sports, then please hit us up on Instagram. And that's at FemStrongPod, FemStrongPod.
And thanks so much for listening to FemStrong, the podcast by, for, and about women in strength sports. Britt, where can they find you?
Sure. On Instagram, my handle is bra_lifts. That's BRUH_LIFTS.
And Meredith?
Meredith.
I'm on Instagram as well, and it's BasicWitch, BAICKWITCH.
And this is Jess, and you can find me at JESSKAH_P. Our FemStrong Instagram is FemStrongPod, FemStrongPod. And yeah, you can find information as well in the kind of episode notes about the different coaching and stuff that the women that we interviewed in this episode provide. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.